Chapter 6. The Chicago story gets big over the course of a few hours. The comments section explodes. Some guy out in Oregon posts side-by-side screen grabs of the original news footage and the more recent airings that have the Moog weapon digitally removed, as if no one would notice that they edited the footage. But the followers of TWAU noticed. And as view counts on the article continue to rise, the word gets out. The word cover-up starts getting thrown around, and people start questioning why the media would edit the footage. All because of the blog post. I did some good. No one on the news mentions that the footage has been altered, obviously. I'm guessing the Moogs have probably already infiltrated the media, too. All the talking heads keep saying there were no casualties, but I don't believe them. I worry that the Guard, our only real hope against the Moogs, are gone, and that Sarah's been dragged down with them. And when I think of that, all the excitement I have about the blog post going a little viral disappears. It's just a single shot in an intergalactic fight. Child's play. I've managed to get in touch with Guard. He thinks the Chicago story is great and tells me to keep up the good work. My luck continues later in the night, after spending the evening driving from the truck stop near Dallas to the middle of Louisiana. At a motel outside of a suburb of Shreveport, there's a breakthrough with the FBI computer. The blinking, running codes disappear, and suddenly the computer boots up to the normal desktop. The Moog profile is still missing, but the computer itself is up and running and unlocked, so I can read all the emails the late Agent Purdy had downloaded to his computer. The stuff that led me to Sarah to begin with. Only, I never had time to actually go through most of the emails before I got shut out of the laptop. This is some real-life hacker sort of badassery that can actually make a difference. I compile as much data as I can. Over and over again, Purdy keeps talking about some secretary. And for the first 20 emails or so, I'm pretty convinced he's banging his office assistant or something. Then I hit gold with a chain between Purdy and someone I've never heard of, who signs their emails simply as D. D writes, "Secretary Sanderson's body is reacting remarkably to the procedures. Intel suggests that many high-profile targets will join the cause when they see the results." What? I search for Secretary Sanderson online and feel like a total dumbass when I realize that it wasn't a secretary that Purdy kept referencing in his emails, but a capital S secretary, as in Secretary of Defense Bud Sanderson. The Moog corruption goes higher up in the government than we thought. I speed read the other emails, which reference more weird injections that Sanderson had to look younger. At first, I can't figure out why everyone is so worried about his plastic surgery, until I read enough emails that it dawns on me that these procedures must involve the Moogs. Sanderson is filling himself up with alien shit that apparently makes him look like 20 years younger than he actually is. I pull Sanderson up on an internet image search but can't find any pictures of him from the past year or two. In the most recent one I can track down, he's an ancient-looking dude who looks like he hasn't seen the inside of a gym since the 50s. I try to make sense of what this means. If someone that high up on the government food chain is involved, it makes me wonder if the president could be in on it, or even leaders from other countries. Could the Moogs be working over other nations just like they are the United States? I text Guard about this, wondering if he's got any way to hack into the secretary's computer, even though I'm guessing it's hidden away behind a million government firewalls or whatever. Maybe he'll be able to track down a recent picture of the secretary for the sake of comparison. Guard hasn't been the best at getting back to me lately, but this could be huge. I start to get a little worried that Guard's somehow been caught. And without him, what would I even begin to do? I'd be screwed, broke, without guidance, not to mention the fact that if they found Guard, they will sure as hell find me. And then there's Sarah, my only other friend in this mess. Despite being afraid that she might have been caught up in whatever went down in Chicago, I hope for the best and write my daily email to her, telling her about the secretary. I hope she's getting these messages. I hope she's somewhere safe, and that she's using the info I send her to help the guard. To help Earth. Even if she can't get back to me. After writing her, I start reading more of Purdy's email until I fall asleep with my netbook sitting on my chest. Then, in the middle of the night, I'm jolted awake by an electronic chirping sound. At first, I think it's coming from the computer on top of me, but I tap on the keys a few times and realize that it's dead because I never plugged it in to charge. Then I recognize the noise. It's the text message alert on my old burner phone, the one that's been floating around in the bottom of my messenger bag ever since guards sent me the new one. I dig it out and breathe a sigh of relief. Guard's finally written me back. Guard. Hey. Me. Dude. Where have you been? Why are you texting this phone? Guard. Long story. Lost some of my contacts. Where are you? Me. Outside Shreveport. Guard. Perfect. I'm not far. Meet with me. Me. K. When? Guard. ASAP. And then, the next text comes in. An address. It's a place on the other side of Shreveport, just off the highway. It's 3 in the morning, but I'm suddenly wide awake with relief that guard's okay and stoked that I'm finally going to meet the man himself. I get all my shit together, head out to my truck, and then speed towards the other side of the city. As always, I keep an eye out for anyone who might be following me, and take a few extra turns and sidetracks before eventually stopping in front of the place guard sent me to. The building looks like an abandoned warehouse, the windows mostly boarded up or barred. The outside is a light-colored brick covered with layer after layer of graffiti. This is so badass, I think. I bet he has a high-tech safe house in here or something. I park, slip my messenger bag over my shoulder, and get out. I'm a few steps towards the building when my pocket starts to ring. It's my new phone, the one guard sent me. The call is coming in as blocked, which, considering who must be calling me, is not surprising. I hit the talk button as I jog up to the steps of the warehouse. "Yo, man," I say. I pull open the big metal door at the entrance. It makes a loud, wrenching sound that echoes through the dark building. "Where are you at?"
"Our communications have been compromised," a voice says.
It's electronic, computerized. Guard must be masking his identity, or else the phone's speaker has completely crapped out. The voice is so weird that it takes me a second to even register what he's saying. "Dude, what are you talking about?" I take a few steps into the warehouse using the old burner phone as a flashlight. It only lights up the space a few feet ahead of me. Getting total flashback vibes to the haunted houses and dark cornfield hayrides of Halloween in Paradise.
"Are you here yet? Is there a light switch or something? I'm here to—"
"Listen to me. Someone's linked you to your old phone," the electronic voice says. "I never texted you. It's a trap. You need to leave. Now."
I freeze.
Not just because my brain is trying to process guard's words, but because the light from the other burner has lit up a pair of black boots. Someone standing just a few yards away from me. As the phone against my ear goes silent, I raise the one in my hand until I'm staring down the barrel of a hand cannon. The same kind of Moog firearm I spotted on the roof of the building in Chicago. A man in a black suit holds it. His finger hits something on the side of the weapon, and the gun lights up with a deep purple color. Around me, half a dozen identical lights power on. I'm fucked. Everything happens really fast. Suddenly, there are giant overhead lights on throughout the warehouse. 7 agents stand around me in a circle. I'm guessing they must be FBI, that or the Moogs have gotten really good at playing human.
"Drop what's in your hands!"
someone shouts. I hesitate, but then I feel something cold and metallic butting up against the back of my head, and I open my fingers, letting both my phones fall to the ground.
"Mark James,"
one of them, a man, says as he steps forward, keeping his weapon trained on me.
"You
are in deep shit. My head starts to spin. A million thoughts and questions and fears all exploding at once. How did they find me? What do they know I know?
You look surprised, the man says. But you've been sloppy, kid. We found video of you buying your disposable cell. Those burners are handy, but they can be easily compromised and tracked once we've got the model and phone number figured out.
The texts, I murmur.
You think the FBI can't fake a few text messages? For someone wanted for stealing top secret materials, we figured you'd be smarter.
Damn it. I should have thrown my burner out. How could I have been so stupid? I wonder if they've read all my old texts on that phone. I try to think back on my conversations with Guard. Shit. They must know I'm also Jolly Roger 182. I never should have responded to those texts from the burner.
I don't know what you're...
I start.
Save it for the interrogation. The man says, his lips curl up in a satisfied grin. The word interrogation sparks something in my brain, and I start a desperate attempt to get out of this thing. I sigh loudly, shaking my head.
Do you have any idea what's really going on here?
I ask, taking a step towards the man talking to me. I can see his finger tighten around the trigger, and I swallow hard and try not to shit my pants.
I'm working undercover for Agent Walker's team. She recruited me in Paradise. I'm tracking a cyber terrorist. The whole thing with the computer was to prove I'm not working with you guys. You're going to blow my damned cover.
I can see something in his eyes that tells me he's actually entertaining this idea as possibly being true. Still, he doesn't lower his weapon. Agent Walker has been out of contact with the Bureau for days. She's being labeled as a traitor to...
You have no idea what happened in Dulce,
I say, cutting him off. Purdy's dead. Walker's taken her team underground to do some, I struggle, dark black ops work. I pray that dark black ops is a real thing. The agent's smile fades, and I can see some of the others looking back and forth at each other in my peripheral vision. The thing is, it would probably only take like one phone call to find out that I'm totally bullshitting them. I need to get out of here, as fast as I can. Still, acting like a total badass around these guys pumps me up. I'm starting to feel a little bit like my old self again. Like when I was hassling freshmen or tripping new kids at Paradise High. When no one would dare mess with me. Where's Walker now? The agent asks. There's a hint of a smile on his face, and I crumble as I realize that even if he is buying my story, if the government thinks Walker's a traitor, this agent is probably imagining all the awards and honors that'd be handed to him for hauling her in.
That's classified information, I say, trying not to let my voice waver.
That's fine. I have a feeling you'll declassify it very soon. The agent nods to one of the others. Get him out of here. That's when I see the big black van parked at the other end of the warehouse, near a metal loading bay door.
Wait!
I practically scream as two of the agents grab my arms. I try to shake them off, but one of them digs a gun into my back. The other pulls my messenger bag off my shoulder and hands it over to someone else. I can't believe they're going to get their hands on my computers, my notes, that weird grenade.
Save it, kid, someone says.
No, I say. My mind is racing.
Even if I wrestle free from the agents holding me, there are too many here. There's no way I'm making it back to my truck, not without something crazy happening. So I get a little crazy.
There's a homing beacon, I say. In my bag, an emergency signal, in case I got pinned down. All you have to do is press it, and Walker will be here within the hour. She'll back my story up.
The leader looks at me, then at some of the other agents. After a few seconds, he walks over and grabs my bag from another suit. It's, Moog tech, so it looks kind of weird, I say as he starts rummaging through my stuff. I note that he doesn't look confused at all when I say Moog. Of course not. He's using their guns, after all. I wonder if he hasn't realized that they're the real bad guys yet, or if he just doesn't care. Finally, he pulls out the little cylinder covered in the weird symbols. You just have to click the top of it, I add. He stares down at the object in his hands for a few seconds and then motions towards the van. Take him back to headquarters, he says. Call in reinforcements. I want a strong perimeter. We're taking Agent Walker in for questioning. The two agents at my sides start to drag me towards the van. No! I shout. If I get in that van, I'm never seeing the outside world again. You can't do this! Let me stay here and wait for... Something hard hits the back of my head and shuts me up. My vision goes a little starry. I shake my head and look back at the agent who took the grenade. He's still eyeing it curiously. And then he does it. He pushes the button. I hear a click, followed by a few electronic beeps. He stares down at the grenade in confusion. What the? He starts. I muster all the strength inside me. Every weight lifted and drill run and tackle practiced, and break free from the agent's grips. I hit the cement floor, just as the grenade goes off. Chapter 7. The concussive wave passes over me and presses me into the concrete floor so hard I'm afraid my ribs are going to snap. There's no fire, just pressure. Like some telekinetic force pushing anything and everything away from the detonation site. Agents fly through the air. The lights go out almost immediately. All around me there's the sound of breaking glass as the force of the weapon shatters the windows of the building and van. And then, it's over. I'd probably think the whole thing was pretty awesome if I wasn't in the middle of it. I get to my feet as fast as I can and run towards the rectangle of moonlight where the front doors had been earlier. The blast must have blown them out. My head is all fuzzy, like I've just stuck it inside a subwoofer. I can hear people groaning and moving about in the rest of the building, but I can't tell where any of them are or how hurt they might be. All I can do is run. I'm almost to the door when I realize I can't leave without my bag. It's got my computers and my notes. Everything, really, in it, including my keys. Luckily, the blast blew out all the dirty windows and the boards that have been covering half of them, so there's at least some moonlight, and it only takes me a minute to locate the messenger bag. I find it piled up with a bunch of debris, but this detour is enough time for a few of the agents to get back to their feet. I can hear their boots pounding against the concrete floor, which is great because it means that I didn't accidentally kill anybody, but also means I'm one step closer to getting shot, arrested, or both. I sprint towards the door. I just have to make it outside and into my truck. The lead agent steps in front of the doorway when I'm just a few yards away. He holds his gun up directly at my chest. You smug little asshole, he says. Didn't you know stealing classified intel is considered treason? He lowers the gun to my legs and pulls the trigger. I brace for impact, ready for my knee to be destroyed. It's all over now. Only nothing happens. I see him pull the trigger again and again, but there's no bullet or laser or even wisp of smoke. Just a little click each time he tries to shoot me. It's only then that I realize the gun's not lit up anymore. I take a quick glance around and don't see any of the purple lights anywhere. Whatever that grenade did must have screwed with the Moog weapons, which means the only thing standing between me and freedom is an unarmed man. The lead agent is still trying to pull the trigger when I lunge forward. I may not be the best spy, or computer geek, or liar, but I do throw a hell of a right hook. All of the fights I got into back in Paradise taught me that. And while John Smith may have been able to kick my ass with his alien kung fu, this guy is very much a human. He tries to move too late, and my fist connects with the bottom of his jaw. He drops like a stone, and by the time he actually hits the floor, I'm jumping over his legs and then running down the stairs, digging through my bag with one hand as I make a beeline for my truck. I'm starting the engine when the first shot is fired. The other agents must have realized the Moog weapons weren't working and dug out their normal guns. I hear the bullet bounce off the metal of my hood, then there's another one, and my back windshield shatters.
Shit!
I shout, crouching down as much as I can. I shift into gear and slam my right foot down on the gas, peeling out as I hear more shots go whizzing through my tailgate. I think I'm out of harm's way when suddenly I feel a burning pain in my left arm, causing me to swerve and almost crash into a cement pylon. I look down and see blood pouring through my shirt sleeve. Oh my God. You just got shot, Mark. Holy shit. I think the bullet just grazed me, but it still hurts like hell and there's a lot of blood. As I barrel onto the highway, keeping one eye on my rearview mirror, I find a dirty t-shirt from the back cab and wrap it around the wound to try to stop the bleeding. I'm just glad that the sun hasn't come up yet. This early in the morning, there's hardly anyone on the road to notice my terrible driving as I try to figure out how injured I am while the wind roars through my truck thanks to the shattered back windshield. After 10 minutes or so, I take an exit at random and enter a neighborhood. I figure if the FBI called in reinforcements or police or anything, the highway is the first place they'd look, and a bullet-ridden truck missing a back windshield isn't exactly the kind of thing you can easily hide from a police chopper on a deserted highway. I buzz through dark streets just trying to get as far away from the city center as I can. I drive and try not to completely freak out. My heart pounds in my chest so hard I'm afraid I'm going to have a heart attack, which would be the biggest joke ever. I survived fights with the FBI and alien invaders, but in the end, the excitement was all too much for me and my heart exploded in some godforsaken little town in Louisiana. I want to text Guard to tell him I'm okay, but I've just realized I left both my phones back at the warehouse. Plus, my netbook is dead. I am completely alone right now. The t-shirt around my arm at least seems to have stopped the bleeding for now. So I keep driving and try to make sense of what just happened and not vomit, which feels like something I might do at any moment. Walker was right. Not everyone in the FBI is as smart as she is. There's fighting within the Bureau. And if the FBI is breaking into factions, it might be like that in other government agencies across the country, right? Maybe even the world. At first, this thought gets me excited to know that people aren't just following along blindly with the Moogs. But then I realize that if we're fighting each other, it'll make the Earth that much easier for them to take over when they're done with the Lorik. What we need is a strong defense, a united human front. We need to support the Guard. Sarah, where are you? Somewhere on the outskirts of a suburb, I notice the first hint of smoke coming out from under the hood of my truck. I tell myself it's probably just dust or something, but after a few more miles, there's more smoke or steam pouring out of the bullet holes. The fact that I even have bullet holes in my hood is a pretty good indication that something is screwed up inside. No, 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 I say. It starts in a whisper, but each word gets louder until I'm shouting at my truck. When the engine starts to make a clicking noise, I pull into a strip mall parking lot and get all the way behind a liquor store before the truck just up and dies. I have enough momentum to sort of hide it behind a wall of dumpsters. When I lift the hood up, smoke billows out. There's no way I'm going to be able to fix this. I'm completely overwhelmed. Lost. No phone. No computer. A gunshot wound. And no one in the world knows where I am. I let the hood fall back down. Anger, fear, confusion. My blood is boiling. I bring my right fist down onto the hood, denting it a little. It feels good to do so. And then suddenly, I'm kicking at the headlights and slamming my knuckles into the side of the truck over and over again. The wound in my arm hurts with each impact, but I'm so overcome with rage that I keep on beating the crap out of this vehicle, this thing that has let me down and stranded me in the middle of nowhere. I don't even care about the noise I'm making, all the grunting and shouting and banging. Finally, I stop, exhausted. I let my head rest against the driver's side door. My breathing is fast and shallow, making me a little lightheaded. The knuckles on my right hand are bloody and my skin feels clammy. Calm down, Mark. Get your shit together. I take a deep breath. In the distance, I see a sign for a hotel. That at least gives me a destination. I can't exactly walk in with a bloody arm, so I fish my letter jacket out of the back seat, grimacing as I slide my injured limb through it. I gather all my important belongings and shove them into the messenger bag, then start out on foot, walking the half a dozen blocks to the hotel. Before I go in, I tiptoe through the side gate where there's a pool and dunk my hands into the cool water to wash them off. A dark red cloud drifts away from my fingers as I rub them together, and I wonder how the hell I ended up in this situation. Inside, I feed the front desk girl a story about how I was mugged and just left the police station and don't have any ID, but luckily still have a stack of cash I'd hidden in my shoe that can pay for the night. She seems hesitant at first, but I put on my best pouting face and practically beg her to get me a room. This must work because she relents, and then suddenly, I'm inside a decent hotel room that looks like heaven after some of the shitbox motels I've been staying in lately. I've got an exterior room, meaning the front door opens up to the parking lot, and a window in the bathroom leads to a wooded area out back. After the last hour of my life, it's good to know that I have multiple escape routes if I need them. On the bed, I take stock of everything in my bag. The computers are a little scuffed up but don't look too damaged. I plug the little netbook in, fire it up, and then log on to TWAU's secure chat client. Guard messages me right away. Guard, I thought you were a goner. Me, how do I know this is the real you? Guard, I come from the planet Shlongda. I actually laugh. I can't help it. The planet Shlongda appeared in one of the first issues of They Walk Among Us, the old print version I took from Sam Good's house, and was supposed to be the home of a bunch of Krakens or something. When I'd read the name of the planet, I'd immediately forwarded a scan of the article to Guard and laughed about the fact that someone had obviously made it up to screw with the editors there. This is the real Guard. I gave him the short story of what happened, being sure to point out the fact that I just faced half a dozen evil FBI agents and survived while he was hiding behind a computer somewhere. Eventually, I get to the real issue. I'm kind of stuck here now, and as soon as someone finds my truck, they'll start looking for me in this area. Guard, stay there for the night. I'll have directions for you in the morning. I'll work something out. Me, what the hell was that grenade? Guard, combination specialized EMP and concussion blast. I stare at the computer, wondering yet again who it is that's on the other end of this chat. All I know about Guard is his screen name and that he's someone who can deliver a bunch of cash and military-grade weapons at a moment's notice. Guard notices that I haven't responded. Guard, are we cool? Me, yeah, sure. I close the netbook and carefully peel off my jacket. The left sleeve is stained with blood. Ruined, I'm guessing, but that's okay. It's not like Paradise High even exists anymore. In the bathroom, I inspect the wound on my arm, cleaning it off using some cold water and a plastic hotel cup. There's a 2-inch gash just under my delt. A little higher, and it would have totally screwed up my shoulder. It probably needs stitches, but the last thing I can do is go to a hospital right now. Not here, where the FBI is surely looking for me. So I tie a hotel towel around it and hope for the best. At least it's not your passing arm, a voice inside me says, as if that even matters now. I sit on the bed. I should sleep. I need to get as much rest as possible. But all I can do is stare at the door, listening for the sounds of people who've tracked me down
and have come to drag me away to some hell I'll never be able to escape from. Chapter 8. I wake up to someone pounding on my hotel room door, and I'm on my feet and throwing clothes on in record time, ready to fly out the bathroom window and disappear into the woods. I forget that I have a damned gunshot wound on my arm until I pull my bag over my shoulder and end up wincing in pain, grinding my teeth together to keep from shouting. I'm just about to make a dash towards the window in the bathroom when I notice that I'm still logged onto the blog's chat client. I remembered to keep the computer plugged in this time, and that Guard has sent me like a dozen messages telling me to expect someone and to answer when they come knocking and to not use my real name or info when they ask for it. Reluctantly, I look through the door's peephole. There's a man with a clipboard. He's wearing the kind of shirt that has his name sewed onto a patch on his chest. I slowly open the door, keeping it chained. "Hey," I say through the few inches of space. "You expecting a big delivery?" he asks. He smells like a cigar and is sweaty, even though it can't be very hot outside. Yeah? This must be another one of Guard's care packages. He holds the clipboard out in front of himself, obviously waiting for me to open up the door so that he can hand it to me. Instead, I squeeze my right hand out and grab it, sliding it in through the crack. The man sighs loudly and mutters something about what a pain in the ass this job has been today. "I need you to sign the top one and fill out the one underneath," he says. "Okay, give me a second." The top form on the clipboard is from some towing and cargo service that wants a signature as proof of delivery. The other page has something to do with a title and wants my name and home address. Guard's message suddenly makes sense. Still trying to wrap my brain around what's happening, I rely on the name Guard used in his first package delivery and that I've been using at motels. I sign Jolly Roger on the forms. As for my address, I think of the dogs waiting for me at home. 182 Abbey Street in Dozier, Ohio, with a random assortment of numbers as a zip code. When I hand back the forms, I actually open the door. The man takes a look at the pages. "Interesting name," he says. "It's, a family thing," I shrug. I'm expecting him to hand me a box, but instead he holds out a pair of keys. "It's gassed up," he says as I take the keys and stare at them dumbly. "Per the instructions we received." "Instructions?" I ask. But the man's already halfway to a big tow truck parked right in front of my room. "Make sure you get her insured," he calls back to me. "They're not supposed to let you drive off without proof of insurance, but, hell, whatever you said on the phone to the boss at the dealership must have been pretty convincing to drag me out of bed so early." He starts to walk away as I stand dumbfounded in the doorway to my hotel room. I click the unlock button on the keys in my hand, and a shiny, blue, extended cab truck honks in the parking lot. I run back inside to the computer. "Me, you're kidding me with this, right?" Guard, "It should get you where you need to go." Me, "This is crazy." Guard, "As crazy as invaders from Mogador?" Guard, "I figured I might owe you after everything you've been through." Me, "What about my other truck?" Guard, "A separate towing company is picking it up in an hour and taking it to a secure location. Get anything you need out of it now." Something clicks in my brain, even over the rush of the fact that I have a new truck. Me. "Wait. How did you know where I am?" Guard, "I've been monitoring the netbook I sent you. I can track it even when it's powered down. Once I knew the place you were staying, I just had to nudge the front desk for your room number." A weird feeling overtakes me. Something I haven't felt since Sarah started dating John. A particular sort of anger that can only come from realizing that I've been betrayed by someone I thought was looking out for me. Guard has been keeping tabs on me this whole time. Why? I start to worry that this whole drive towards Alabama thing is just a prank.
Me. What the hell, man?
Guard. Apologies. I had to make sure we were working towards the same goal. There's a lot of double-crossing going on in the world right now.
Guard. If it makes any difference, I trust you.
Before I can respond, he messages me an address in Alabama.
Me. Is this where you're at?
Guard. It's what I've gotten set up for you. Home sweet home. I'll be stopping by to see you soon.
Guard. Now if I were you, I'd get the hell out of Louisiana.
I sign off. I'm about to pack up my netbook when I realize that I didn't write to Sarah yesterday. So I sit back on the bed and open up my email.
Sarah, I don't even know what to say about the last 24 hours.
You know what's funny? When we were both still in paradise, I actually thought that maybe we'd go to prom together. Not dating or anything, just together. I was worried about prom, getting a tux and a corsage and crap. Yesterday, I got shot at by a bunch of FBI agents.
Sarah, I hope you're okay.
I'm not saying my old truck was a piece of crap or anything, but this new one is kind of the shit. I'm still pissed that Guard's been secretly tracking me this whole time, but my new wheels help make up for that. I plug the address Guard sent me into the truck's GPS system and head towards Alabama. My destination is about 8 hours away. I can make it to my new home base by the late afternoon. That leaves me with plenty of time to figure out what the hell has happened in the last few days. Time to digest. Just me, an energy drink, and 8 hours of open road and news radio. Some of the FBI is working with the Moogs. I don't know how many agents or what percentage. Actually, if the FBI is working with them, then there are probably other agencies on their side as well. And some of the government is in on it too. Sanderson is proof enough of that. There are some people rebelling, but again, it could be just Walker and her team, or half the FBI. There's so many variables that it's impossible for me to even begin to imagine things like odds or stats. All I know for sure is that the majority of the world knows nothing about what's really going on. If they did, that's where my focus should be. Trying to convince people that there's an actual threat here. That there are aliens who will think nothing of destroying our planet if it means getting what they want, whatever that is. Who might even be gearing up for a full-scale invasion or something. I need to find more proof of what's happening. I need to turn They Walk Among Us into a movement. Maybe even an army. And it all goes back to Sarah again. Not just because I promised and want to protect her, but because we need her to get to the other guard. She's our connection, but I still have no idea how to find her. I need to step my search for her up to the next level. I think about posting a message to her on TWAU, but realize that the dumbest thing I could do is get her face or name out there where some ass clown might see her and try to tell me where she is, only to alert other authorities. I should discuss options with Guard. Maybe he can pull some hacker moves and break into her email account or something. Maybe he can even track her face using security cameras. We have to find her. Not for her sake or mine, but for the world's. So we can create a united front with the Lorik. And it would be great to have someone helping me out. In person. Someone I knew and trusted and cared for. Someone to keep me from being lost and alone in all this. At a little drugstore just across the Alabama border, I stopped to buy butterfly bandages. I try to remember a time when I didn't have problems like taking care of gunshot wounds or running from government agencies. It wasn't that long ago, just a few months. A weird thing happens as I think about Friday nights under stadium lights and hanging out with my buddies after games. Usually when I do this, I wish I could go back and enjoy not knowing what's going on in the world. But now, I'm glad I have a much bigger purpose. I can do great things. Not that I wasn't great before, I'm just in a position now where I can do some truly capital A awesome shit. The address guard gave me takes me through Huntsville, which looks like a pretty good-sized town, and then out into nothingness and a series of back roads and dirt trails that lead me closer and closer to the edge of a national park. I start to worry that the GPS has completely failed at its job of getting me to the base until a structure finally comes into view. It's almost completely hidden by hills and trees set back from a dirt path. The GPS tells me that I've arrived at my destination just as I stop in front of a giant wrought iron gate topped with the words, Yellowhammer Ranch. It doesn't look like anyone's been here in a long time. There's no lock on the gate, which is good for me right now, but also means that the place probably has shit security. As I drive over a cattle guard and onto the property, my stomach starts to clench up a little bit. This whole thing feels really weird, as if I'm trespassing on someone else's property. The house is one story and looks like a big log cabin. Great. I'm attending fugitive camp. I stay alert. I'm not going to do what I did at the warehouse and just barge in, though at this point the FBI or Moogs would have to go pretty far out of their way in order to track me to this remote location. I knock on the front door, since I have no idea if I'm actually in the right place or not. When no one answers, I circle the house just to make sure there's not some rancher out herding sheep or whatever it is people do in places like this. But there's only overgrown fields marked off by barbed wire fences and a barn out back that's missing almost all of one side and is obviously empty. A big patch of grass in front of it has been flattened and burned in places like something really big was sitting on top of it that was only recently moved. I shrug and look around, guessing that there was a tractor or something there that got hauled off. Back on the front porch, I tried the doorknob. The house is unlocked. Hello? I call. But there's no sound or movement, so I head in and find a light switch. The place looks like I'd expect a country home to look. There's a lot of oversized furniture, mostly made out of wood. A cow skull hangs over the fireplace. A leather couch sits in front of a projector-style big-screen TV that's probably as old as I am, and I'm guessing weighs a ton. I open up the refrigerator in the kitchen out of curiosity and see that it's stocked with essentials. Milk, water, and even a few steaks. The pantry's got a bunch of food in it, too. Everything looks fresh. Thanks, guard, for making sure I don't starve. I check out a few of the bedrooms, but there's nothing really interesting until I stop in front of a quilt hanging at the end of a hallway near the back of the house. There's a note on it that says, "Look behind me." Huh? I pull back the quilt and find a solid sheet of metal. It's got a little rectangle of reddish-colored glass on the right side where a doorknob or handle might normally be. It looks just like the little fingerprint scanner on my netbook. No way, I murmur as I raise my thumb to the little port. There's a beeping noise, and the glass lights up green. The door starts clicking loudly, and I take a few steps back, concerned about what I'm going to find on the other side. After a few seconds, the thick metal door swings open a bit, and I push it in farther as I enter the room. I immediately see about a dozen computer monitors covering one of the walls. Each of them is streaming footage from the areas in and around the house. There must be cameras located all over the grounds. So much for laughing at the lack of security. There's a sleek-looking computer set up at a desk opposite the other monitors. A couple of burner phones sit beside it. I turn one on and find that guard's number is already programmed into it, then pocket the burner. What the hell is... I say as I take everything in. But then I turn around and never finish the question. The wall behind me is lined with shelves. There are several handguns, rifles, and knives sitting on them, along with a few things that I assume are weapons but don't immediately recognize. In the center is a folder with something written on it in black marker. I pick it up. "I hope you're ready for war. G." Chapter 9. I settle in. Well, as much as I can in a house where I feel completely out of place. I clean up the gash on my arm using a first aid kit I find in one of the bathrooms. The butterfly bandages don't seem like they're doing a great job of keeping the wound closed, so I try to figure out another way of dealing with it. After spending like an hour looking up advice on the internet, I dig through a bunch of drawers in the house until I find a tube of super glue, and then put a layer of the stuff over the graze. It feels weird as hell, but it's the best I can do. As badass as I've been recently, I don't think I have it in me to do my own stitches. Needles were never my thing. Then I get straight to work. Whatever personal business Guard was dealing with must be taken care of, because he's almost always online now. I get Purdy's computer hooked up to the big desktop in the back room, and Guard uses his hacking skills to try to salvage any files that might be hidden on the hard drive, like the Moog Pro files that disappeared when the thing first shut down. He uploads basically everything from my computers to some secure cloud server. We start to build up evidence of what's going on behind the scenes. We read files about the specifications of Moog weaponry that have obviously been written for human users. Proof we need to show the Moogs and FBI are working together. I take some screen grabs and upload them to TWAU under the title Uncovered FBI Training Manual for Moog Weapons. There's also a ton of transcripts that could take months to sort through, many of which have speakers who are noted using initials only. The scariest thing I find repeated references to are upcoming peace talks with leaders from around the world. Could the Moogs be preparing to expose themselves and give Earth an ultimatum? Or have they already gotten to enough world leaders that they're relying on the humans to do that for them? While Guard focuses on recovering files from the hard drive, I go over Purdy's old emails, update the blog, and try to keep up with the insane amount of emails I'm getting on my Jolly Roger 182 account ever since the Chicago story went viral. Most people who write me are assholes who just want to make fun of us and ask if we know where Bigfoot is hiding, but every now and then I get something that's worth following up on. A tattooed gang settling in the Everglades, weird-looking animals spotted flying overhead in Illinois, those sorts of things. I try to get as much info as I can from the sources, then scour local news stories, call police stations anonymously, or anything else I can think of to back up any of the claims. Our most promising lead is this dude named Grahish Sharma over in India. I get a dozen emails from different sources all talking about this commander or priest from some religious group that has something to do with one of the Guard. I'm not exactly sure they're legit, because a lot of the emails have contradictory information, which I'm guessing may have something to do with translation issues. All the messages have one thing in common, though. They all say Sharma shot down a Moog spacecraft and captured the pale-faced bastards inside alive. When I bring this to Guard's attention, he gets really excited about the idea of seeing one of the Moog ships up close, not to mention the fact that we could get footage of real-life Moogs. I respond to every email that mentions the Sharma guy, hoping that someone will be able to put me in contact with him. Our most important break is when Guard manages to track down a recent photo of Secretary of Defense Bud Sanderson, the old, fat, bald guy who was getting Moog injections and plastic surgery done. Sure enough, the guy who looked more like a zombie than a human a few years ago suddenly has a full head of silver hair, smooth skin, and a giant, shit-eating grin. If it wasn't for his eyes and the way his nose crooks to the side, I wouldn't believe it could possibly be the same dude. I read a short expose and post it to the blog. Once again, I feel like I'm actually doing something to help the fight. I just wish we could get more definite proof, something to show the world that the Moogs are real, that we're in danger. That's why we need Sharma, or Sarah. I work through the night, reading, speculating, and taking notes. By the time the sun comes up, I need to get out of the back room and get some fresh air in order to stay focused. So I grab one of the handguns with a silencer on it and head outside. I set up empty aluminum cans in the old barn and start knocking them down one by one. I'm not a bad shot. Would probably be better if I wasn't so jittery from caffeine. The only drawback is that shooting the gun makes the wound on my arm hurt. How ironic. I just hope the super glue helps it heal like it's supposed to. Shooting makes me think of my dad and the rest of my family. I wonder what they're doing, if they're still worried. I don't open their emails because I know I'll want to respond, and the last thing I want to do is put them in danger or put myself in danger by saying something I shouldn't. But it's hard not to have them on my mind when I practice with the weapons. Dad taught me gun safety and used to take me hunting every year. He's the reason I know how to shoot at all. I hope that these aren't skills I'm going to have to put to use anytime soon, but if I do, in a weird way, I think my dad would be proud of me, if he could see the big picture. It hasn't been all that long since I left Paradise in the middle of the night, but it feels like an eternity. That freaks me out a little bit. I mean, I'm hidden away out in the middle of nowhere, trying to track down an alien hunter in India instead of sitting at Nana's kitchen table eating bacon while going over scholarship offers or something. College seems almost laughable given what's going on. The future in general is too much to think about, too far away and unknowable. We might not even be able to save the future or the world. Guard and I are stuck going through data that's weeks old. What if things have gotten so bad that we can't stop the Moogs? I try to center myself. In Paradise, after everything went down at the school, I had Sarah to talk to keep me sane. And so, after my shooting break, I go back inside and email her for the millionth time, knowing by now not to expect an answer. Sarah, I don't know why I keep sending these emails. Part of me hopes that you're reading them, using them to help the Lorik, and can't reply for your own safety. Another part of me worries that you aren't even out there, that you're gone. I refuse to believe that, but I need to hear from you. I start to write about Walker, but think better of it. Even if she was a Moog henchwoman in Paradise, she let me go in Dulce. She's working against them now. And if somehow the Moogs are intercepting my emails to Sarah, I don't want to blow Walker's cover if the aliens haven't completely labeled her a traitor. So instead, I'm kind of vague about my whole trip out into the desert. I thought I had a lead on you in New Mexico. All I found there was a deserted military base. It looked like a major battle went down, way bigger and nastier than what happened in Paradise. I hope you guys got out safe. I hope, like hell, I'm not the only one left to fight these assholes. That would suck. A friend of mine set up a safe house for me, way off the grid. A place where we can work on exposing those pale freaks to the world. If you can get in touch, I'll find a way to send you the coordinates. We're on to something big. Something international. I don't even know what to do with it. If you're reading these, if you're still in contact with John, now would be a really good time to show up. I need your help. Mark. I'm surprised my heart doesn't explode when my email dings later that day, and I see that she's finally replied. Nothing long, just a note saying she's sorry she hasn't contacted me, and that she's with John, and where the hell am I anyway? I type faster than I ever have in my life. I'm about to send her an email detailing exactly how she can get to me, and then I stop. I think again about how careful I've been not to give away too much about where I've been or what I've been up to since I left Paradise in the middle of the night. Guards got my IP address completely blocked, but that doesn't matter if I'm giving my location away in an email. My Jolly Roger 182 address at They Walk Among Us is on a secure server that Guard himself designed, but my personal one is just a free email service. So is Sarah's. The Moogs or FBI could be tapping them. The same thing goes for the phone. If she hasn't been careful with the burners, telling her where I am might be the same as calling up the FBI or the Moogs and giving them my address. There's another possibility, too. One I don't even want to consider. What if it's not even Sarah at all? Think, Mark. Don't get lured into a trap again. I email her back. I'm okay. I was just about to make pizza. What do you want on your half? Mark. The question is the first way I can think of to figure out if I'm talking to the real Sarah Hart. When we were dating, We had a standard order at the pizza place back in Paradise's downtown square. Every Saturday night, we'd slide into a booth together and order the same thing. I wait, staring at my inbox, hardly breathing, as I will a new message to show up on the screen. Finally, it does. Mark, things have been crazy here, but it sounds like it hasn't been easy for you either. Veg for me, please. Don't let any of your gross, all-meat side cross the line. Where are you? Sarah. It's her. That's our order. One medium half veggie, half meat. Soda for me, diet soda for her. But I can't let my excitement about any of this cause me to make some kind of idiotic move that gives away my location. I take a deep breath, try to focus, and then pull up a map of Huntsville, the closest big city. I find a Waffle House on what looks like a busy intersection based on the size of the streets, and email the address to Sarah. Can we meet here? I'll have to make sure you don't have a tail or anything. I'm kind of wanted by a bunch of different bad guys. Come every day at 2 p.m., I'll be watching. When I'm sure everything's okay, I'll take you back to my base. 10 minutes pass. I wonder if she's thinking about whether or not she wants to come, or if she's arguing with John about what to do. Whatever it is, she finally responds. I'll be there. I'll head that way tonight. I laugh, grinning to myself in the back room of the cabin out in the middle of nowhere. Sarah's still alive and fighting. She's okay. And she's coming to Alabama. I know I told her she'd have to come to the Waffle House a few times before I took her back to home base, but as soon as I see her getting out of the taxi the next day, I know that's not going to happen. It takes everything I have not to burst out of my truck, which I've parked at a grocery store parking lot across the street, and cross 6 lanes of traffic to get to her. Instead, I try to play it cool because I know I can't jump into this. We need to play everything as safe as possible. But I can't just watch her leave the restaurant when she's done eating. I won't let her slip away again. So I wait 10 minutes and then call the diner. I describe Sarah to the woman who answers and manage to sweet-talk her into handing the phone over. Hello? Sarah's voice comes out of the receiver, and it's glorious. Hey, I say.
Mark, where are you?
What's the nickname those asswipes in Helena gave you? I ask. I have to be sure.
Huh?
I think they were from your bio class.
Oh,
she says.
Sarah Bleeding Heart?
I grin. There's a parking garage 2 blocks north of here. I'll be on the second floor. Look for a blue truck.
Can't you just...
But she must know how important it is to stay underground. To be incognito. If she's been with John since she left Dulce, she has to have caught on by now.
Okay. I'll see you soon.
I hang up and jet over to the parking garage, the one I scoped out after Sarah finally emailed me back. There I wait, texting guard to let him know she's shown up. The waiting is terrible. I've been trying to rescue, find, or even just be in contact with Sarah for weeks, ever since she disappeared, but the minutes it takes for her to walk from the Waffle House to the parking garage feel like years. With every second that ticks by, I can't help but imagine some terrible scenario that keeps her from getting to me, or some way that I've screwed up and doomed us both. Finally, I see her wandering up the ramp and onto the second floor of the garage. I flash my lights and she hurries towards me. And then I'm out of the truck and running. It's like my body is operating outside of my brain's control. Everything in my head is saying, get in the truck, get both of you to safety, keep your heads down and don't even talk until you're back at the base. But my legs are moving, pumping on their own accord and bringing me sailing towards Sarah. We practically collide in the middle of the parking garage, wrapping our arms around each other. Finally, I'm not alone in this anymore. It's not just me and guards' messages.
Mark,
she says into my shoulder. The way she squeezes me makes my arm hurt like hell, but I ignore it. I feel like some huge weight has been lifted off me.
Jesus, Mark,
she says again, her arms still around me.
What have you been doing?
You'd think I was joking if I told you, I say, squeezing the back of her neck.
Try me.
I don't even know where to begin. She pulls away and takes a good look at me. I can see concern cross her face as she stares into my eyes.
Don't take this the wrong way, she says. But have you been sleeping at all? It looks like.
But she stops and gasps. My fists automatically clench as I look around.
What?
I ask.
Shit. I knew I should have just got us in the truck and then out of here.
What is it?
Mark,
she says, pointing at my left arm. There's blood dripping out from under my t-shirt sleeve.
Are you okay?
I push the cotton of my t-shirt down onto the wound, hoping that stops the bleeding until we get back to home base. Would you believe me if I said I was shot while escaping from a bunch of crooked FBI agents? I ask. She nods, her eyes wide.
I've been shot at a lot lately, she says quietly. A few days ago, I was stabbed by a Moog.
And then we just stare at each other. This is the moment when, months or even a few weeks ago, I'd probably have tried to kiss her, or at least wished that was what I was doing. I'd have ignored the fact that I promised John Smith I'd keep her safe, ignored the fact that he existed at all. But in the parking garage, I look at her, and she looks at me, and there's some kind of joint understanding. The dynamic has changed between us. We've changed. I can't be some hotshot football star trying to win back his ex when the fate of the world could rest on us. And she, there's something different about her. Something fierce. She looks more like a soldier than the girl who used to wander around campus snapping pictures of flowers. I'm so glad you're here, I say, and that you're okay. I'm fine. I'll patch up back at base.
That wound is super gross, Mark, she says, her nose wrinkling a little. You should probably see a doctor.
Her voice trails off. She knows that's not really an option.
I should have brought a healing stone or something with me.
She's eyeing my arm, shaking her head. I stare back at her, not knowing what she's talking about. We have a lot to catch up on, I say. I put out my arm, ushering her towards my truck.
Let's start with why you're in Alabama, she says.
That's kind of a long story. I open the passenger side door for her. She's halfway inside before she stops and turns to me.
Wait, when did you get this truck?
I start to answer, but a huge bird lands on the hood of the truck with a loud thump. I jump, instinctively raising a fist.
Jesus, what the hell?
I ask.
Oh,
Sarah says, smiling.
Do you remember Bernie Kosar?